Thank you. Thank you for giving the opportunity to talk here. So today I will tell you about work that appeared like 2 days ago, collaboration with Michael Dine and Zohar. So we will talk about some aspects of the coupling of supersymmetric quantum field theory to classical supergravity. In particular, the problem we will focus on is the following. Imagine that we have control on the dynamics of the quantum field theory in the rigid limit, so when M Planck is infinity. And we would like to understand how the dynamics of the QFT affects and modifies the coupling to supergravity. In particular, we will show a prescription that allows to, in principle, to fix systematically relative correction to supergravity Lagrangian, working order by order in the supergravity fields. And then, if there is time, I will show an explicit check that this prescription works by performing a loop calculation in one example. So before starting, let me give some motivations. So the first motivation comes from the case in which gravity is actually not dynamical. That is from the study of supersymmetric theories on Carl space. In this context, of course, there is an interesting interplay between the dynamics of the theory and the presence of non-trivial background fields. We had many talks already in the program and the conference about how recently many exact results have been obtained by putting supersymmetric theories on cup manifolds and using, for instance, localization techniques to compute exactly the partition functions for some of these theories. I would like to tell you about one aspect of this story which is still not very clear, in which probably the method that we discussed today could be useful. And this is the following. It's the understanding the role of anomalies. In particular, in the case of dimensional reduction. So let me explain what I mean. Given this sets, this set of exact results, one can consider the following exercise. Start with a four-dimensional theory, for instance, or generic even dimensional theory, which is given by the product of a three-dimensional manifold times a circle, and consider the limit in which the wavelength of excitations in this theory is much larger than the radius of this one. And in this case, one ends up with an effective theory in three dimension. And the small puzzle that arises here is that the four-dimensional theory, in principle, can have all sorts of anomalies in global symmetries, chiral anomalies, but also mixed gravitational anomalies, and or Weyl anomalies. But all of this cannot exist in the three-dimensional theory. And so, on the other hand, the partition function, the anomalous variation of the partition function should be possible to see also in this limit. So the non-trivial problem here is to understand what should happen is that there is a very precise set of higher dimensional operators in these theories that are responsible for matching the anomalies of the original theory. So this problem, for instance, has not been solved. I mean, this set of higher dimensional operators has not been fixed in detail. And you see here, it's crucial the interplay between the dynamics of the theory and the presence of the non-trivial background fields. And is one well-defined problem that, in principle, could be tackled with the techniques that we discussed today. Another unrelated aspect, which has attracted some interest recently, is the study of dynamics. Of these theories in ADS4. There is a recent paper by Aroni and collaborators. And this is an interesting problem to consider because ADS4 provides a symmetric IR regulator. And some of the relative corrections that we'll discuss today, which arise when a non-trivial background is coupled to the theory, could in principle play an interesting role in understanding the dynamics of these Gitch theories in ADS. So this is the first set of motivations. I have to say that this first set of motivation is more like program for the future. I won't have anything more to say on that today. So the second set of motivations is instead in the case where gravity is dynamical. In particular, comes from models of this form, in which we have two sectors, say two gauge theories, which interact only via supergravity interactions. Models of this sort arise can arise in the context of string compactification. Tremble scenario. And they have been considered in connection with the phenomenology, and in particular mediation supersymmetry breaking. The idea here is that one could take one of the two sectors to be some supersymmetric extension of the standard model, and the other sector to be some Susie breaking theory. And via supergravity interaction, the supersymmetry breaking is mediated to the sector A. And in this context, one assumption that is often made, a very natural assumption, was under the name of sequestering. And so there are various ways to define, but the practical definition is that the leading interactions induced by gravity between A and B which are in principle uncalculable at the level of the low energy theory, they are in fact suppressed. They come with very small coefficient. And in this case, the effect of supergravity in mediating interaction between A and B is completely calculable at the level of the low energy theory. And we will see by using this method that indeed, even when sequestering is realized, the interactions between A and B are much stronger than expected, than naively expected. um, So in the context of mediation of Susie Breaking, it is what is called anomaly mediation, phenomena. We'll see more detail when we
Can you turn on the light, the middle light?
Yes, where is the
On the left.
Okay, can you see? Okay. So this was for very impressionistic motivations. Now let me go on. So we start with coupling of Susie 50 to supergravity.
Could you remind, what's the difference between anomaly mediation and just normal gravity mediation?
So the crucial difference is in this assumption. Usually, when you talk broadly about gravity mediation, it means that you have some operator, high-dimensional operators, which are suppressed by M. Planck, and whose coefficient is not determined by the low-energy theory. It's something that you principle not known, comes from the microscopic theory. And the case in which anomaly mediation is more important is when the leading interaction coming from microscopic theory is suppressed, it comes with very small coefficient. And in this case, you have this kind of mediation. So let me start with the linear order. So linear order, the coupling to gravity is the universal coupling to the energy momentum tensor. And since we are in the cosine context of supersymmetric theories, we have to consider also supersymmetric partners. So let me introduce the supersymmetric multiple T mu nu. So starting point to define this multiple in the supersymmetric algebra. I will be schematic about coefficients. So charges can be expressed in terms of the current. So here one would be tempted to just erase the integration and derive the current algebra, but as is well known, there are possible Schwinger terms that can arise. So the correct relation via this form, where this operator will be such that is concerned and it does not affect the charge. So it turns out that there are several different choices for these Schwinger terms, but in any case, it's not possible to close the current algebra just considering the energy momentum tensor and the supercurrent. The simplest possible, possibly, I don't know if it's really simple, but okay, one choice for the Schwinger terms is the give rise to the gives rise to the so-called Ferrara's Mino multiplet. And in this case, the extension contains one current and a complex scalar operator. And this set of fields can be embedded in a superfield, which has the following form. Again, I'm being schematic about coefficients. So you see, this is the Schwinger term in this case.
Can I ask?
Yes.
These things that you call Schwinger terms can they be obtained by just studying carefully the classical transformation rules? I think intrinsically quantum.
No, it's not. This is classical. It's not. Yeah, it's just the classical algebra.
That's what I thought. Thank you.
Yes, sorry. This S is the supersymmetry current, which is the current that gives rise to the supersymmetry charge. And this J is an operator that I have to add in order for this multiplet to close, okay, to have a representation of the supersymmetry algebra. So this superfield can be defined by an equation in superspace following. D denotes the ordinary covariant derivative superspace, where X is a chiral operator . So let me define the components of X. X, which is will be important in our story, at least for the linear order, takes the following form. It is the lowest component is small x. Then it contains the trace of the supercurrent.
Your first expression for this multiplet, supermultiplet of currents is kind of classical, right? Say, this one is already anomaly, right? Or this relation is already a loop?
Not necessarily. I mean, these are just traces, but these traces can be zero also in a classical field.
Let's say that we are not considering a quantum loop, right? Yes. It's still x non-zero, right?
Yeah, it can be, for instance, if you have a mass term, if
you have a
classical breaking of a conformal symmetry. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so what I was saying, indeed, is that, as you notice, this x contains traces, and if the theory is conformal, then up to improvements, which I'm going to discuss now. So X can be taken to be zero. So this equation simplifies. Now I want to consider non-conformal theories and give you the form of X in some examples.
X is zero in the interdimensional
tensors trace. Sorry? So X is zero in the interdimensional tensors trace. Yes. Mm-hmm. I forgot to say something. So what I was telling you is the coupling of a supersymmetric theory to supergravity. So at linear order, once we fix the multiplet of the energy momentum tensor, we have the corresponding supergravity multiplet. Which is given by the metric, the gravitino, and a vector, and a scalar field. This comprises the so-called old minimal supergravity multiplet. and the universal coupling at inner order is what I wrote here. So you just couple each field to each operator to its source, if you want, in this way. And here I also wrote the kinetic term. That is what we have to include if we want to make gravity dynamical. So notice that the field B and M are non-dynamical auxiliary fields. They don't have derivative in the kinetic term.
I'm sorry, I do not see it from here, but let's say x non-zero, right? Generic CD.
Yes.
So I just do not see it. It's part of this interaction, this x.
Yeah, I write the interaction here. So M is a supergravity field which couples at inner order with x, and the interaction is just at inner order. It's nothing but the coupling to the source.
Sorry.
Okay. And M has a kinetic term, which is not a kinetic term, let's say a quadratic term. In this form, it's an auxiliary field. Okay. So let me discuss the form of the operator X when conformal symmetry is broken. For instance, we can consider case in which conformal symmetry is broken classically. In this case, X is just given by, in particular, this relation contains the relation between the energy moment tensor and mass term plus fermions. There are cases in which instead X is zero at three level, but it's generated by loops. For instance, when we have a classically marginal coupling. In this case, X taken from the waveform. So this is the field that contains the Gino as the loose component. And contains the fields in the multiplet of the vector, the gauge boson in the gauge theories. So now I want to focus on this coupling of X to M. And consider the case in which M takes a verb. So consider now the case in which the supergravity field M takes a non-zero verb. So we see that from here we get holomorphic mass term, which is what is called the term in the literature of supersymmetry breaking. From here, we get an holomorphic trilinear coupling. Scalar, which is what is called a term in the literature of supersymmetry breaking.
But it is already beyond linear approximation, right? Because if it was linear approximation, then all Gregorian fields are supposed to be smaller.
So it is just this comes just from the coupling of M.
No, I see it, but I mean, if you say trying to say that we are switching on gravity, right? So when you are saying switching on gravity implies that.
Yeah, I mean the fact that so this term which is the one that enters when gravity is dynamical, will play a role in explaining why this M is takes a lab. But for the moment, I'm just supposing that M takes a lab, and I'm considering the cavity.
Okay, but then it means that you already kind of included gravity in certain way, not just linear approximation, right? Because it is M squared is already quadratic.
Yeah, but I mean, this is depending on how you do the counting. But in general, when you consider linearized gravity, it means that you take the kinetic term.
Linearized near non-zero background, for example.
So I'm just taking the quadratic kinetic term and the linear coupling to source. So this is what I would call linearized gravity. in this case, we get a coupling which takes the form of original mass. So what I want to say is that these three couplings that are present in the supergravity Lagrangian when M takes a BEV are non-supersymmetric couplings in flat space.
So what determines whether M takes a BEV or not?
Yeah, now I'll discuss this. But they arise from a perfectly supersymmetric term in the Lagrangian, which is just the coupling of M to the operator X, okay? And so now let me discuss two physical situations in which M takes a valve. For the two physical situations in which M takes a valve, we can consider the first example, which is indeed the supersymmetric theories on Karman manifolds, Karl space. So in a paper by Stuccia, Dumitrescu, they studied and classified manifolds in which you can put supersymmetric theories by turning on a trivial background for the old minimal supergravity multiplet, and so in many of these examples, you have a valve for M. So let me stress that this is a perfectly supersymmetric theory, but it lives in a space that requires to turn on a valve from M. An example of this is also IDS4. So this tells us immediately that in all these spaces, we have to include these couplings. Another case in which, so here we are giving examples of when M takes a valve. Another case is, let me consider again. So first, let me consider just one theory that breaks supersymmetry in flat space. So when we break supersymmetry, there is a positive contribution to the energy density, which comes from the breaking of supersymmetry. And if we want the theory that breaks supersymmetry to live in flat space, we have to tune the cosmological constant to be zero. And the way to do this is to consider exactly the quadratic term in the background field M, and we can consider giving the valve to M in such a way to cancel this positive contribution and live in flat space. Okay, so this is another physical situation in which M could take a valve, and in this case, these three couplings are indeed can be interpreted as soft supersymmetry breaking. So in particular, let me consider this case, the one I was referring in the introduction. So we have some A sector and some B sector, and here we have Susi breaking. And in order for this theory to live in flat space, we have to turn on a certain M, and in this way, with this mechanism, we mediate to the theory that lives in A, this kind of terms. So if this theory, for instance, has a, is a gauge theory, we generate automatically a gauging mass. Another way to see this in this context is that we can integrate out M, and we induce. So can everybody see here? No, maybe not.
I can.
So if we integrate out M, we get a term which is a contact interaction between the operator X in A and the operator X in sector B. And when X of the sector B takes a valve, we generate these terms in the visible sector. Okay. So a comment that I want to make here is that in the first case, in which conformal symmetry is broken at the classical level, the coupling of M to X is something that we find already in the supergravity, the classical supergravity Lagrangian. But in these two cases, in which the breaking happens at the relative level of relative corrections, this coupling in principle is not present in the supergravity Lagrangian. This does not mean that this coupling is not supersymmetric. It just means that it is generated, but it's not present at three levels. And indeed, there is time we will see an explicit example of how this term is generated. So this is basically what I wanted to say about linear order coupling. So is there any question before I go to beyond linear order? Okay.
But when M mod zero, does it imply that okay, so do you have something like Galstolen stuff in supergravity, or you know, when it happens, this non-zero, because it looks like kind of breaking certain global symmetry, right?
for instance, maybe you're referring to R symmetry.
No, say for example, you got the lambda square. It's clear that it broke this fermionic U1, right?
This is the R-symmetry. Indeed, when you have a supersymmetric supersymmetry breaking theory, for instance, and you want that to be in flat space,
yeah,
you're forced to turn on a valve for the superpotential, if you want, in order to balance positive contribution to the energy coming from the supersymmetry breaking. And this, in general, will break R-symmetry. So, yeah, that's true. R-symmetry is broken.
Yeah, right. But then, your gravitino would be, say, still massless. So, I mean, in this construction, if you would consider
No, the gravitino in these scenarios, it takes a mass, which is given by the valve of M, and there is a factor.
Okay.
Maybe it's three.
Yeah, okay, so that means.
Okay. So now I'll go. So already at the level of linear couplings, we have seen that there can be a relative correction to the classical supergravity Lagrangian, and you've seen how to describe them. Now, I want to consider going beyond linear order. And so, the idea here is to think of the supergravity multiplet as non-dynamical ground sources for correlators of Ferrazzo-Milo multiplet. Couplings at linear or higher order in sources are in one-to-one correspondence with the contact terms. In such correlators, and this means that the form of sum of this coupling can be fixed by requiring symmetries to symmetry, I should say, operator identities to be respected at constant points. So, trivial example of that. Is the Siegel term. In the theory of a complex scalar, with any one symmetry, so we can couple the current to a background gauge field which computes correlators of this current, and if we want the operator equation that describes the conservation of the current, if we want this to be true also at coincident points, we have to add a very precise term, quadratic order in the sources. So this was just a trivial example. So by applying this logic, I want to first tell you what is the result that we will obtain, and then I will discuss how we obtain this result. So the result is the following. We will find that in the effective Lagrangian, we have to include the term which takes the following form. This is in the case of theories in which conformal symmetry is broken at the quantum level. So as you see, this is takes the form similar to a Siegel term. It's quadratic in the source and quadratic in its of the theory, and the difference with the Siegel term, crucial difference, is that Siegel term is there already at three level, while this term gets generated at two loops. I should define what is gamma. By gamma, I mean the anomalous dimension. Of the field phi, and dot means taking a derivative respect to log mu. So in these theories, this gets generated at two loops, so the lowest order in which it appears is lambda to the fourth in this theory and g to the fourth in this theory. Of course, an interesting application of this, the existence of this coupling, is that going back to the case of it applies in both cases. I mean, whenever we have m that takes a verb, this coupling will generate a holomorphic mass term for the phi fields, which is proportional to the derivative of the anomalous dimension. And in particular, to see breaking theories, this will generate scalar masses.
May I ask you this point?
Yes.
Because, say, at the tree level, you know, for example, in the case you mentioned, like QED, you can say, we started some, say, covariant derivative instead of normal derivative, so you automatically have the A squared term. Okay. Here, say, also at the level of classical interaction, you also can start kind of covariant derivative, which includes the gravitational field.
Yes.
Okay, the terms which we are discussing in this sense, no, would be like iteration of this Lagrangian, right? Because it's already a loop and it's iteration, right? Over so, say, matter field.
So the analogy with this case is that in both cases there is an operator equation, and we can fix the higher order terms by requiring this operator equation to be satisfied at coincident points. There is no, I mean, in this case, this does not cannot be seen as arising from some covariant derivative.
No, but in QED also you have loop diagram, and also you have a terms of different kind. You will get terms which say, I don't know, a minute to the force or whatever.
Yes.
Uses the loop. So loops would produce certain terms, right? And my impression is that what we are discussing here is also matter loop, right? So
yeah, it's generated by loops.
Right. So in this way, I can say start from, say, classical Lagrangian, and then say, okay, let's iterate it, and this storm should come out itself.
Yeah, of course. I mean, indeed, we will, if there is time, we will check in an example that you can start in a theory in which this is zero, for instance, in the UV, and then you go on and you compute loops and you generate this.
Yeah.
But what I want to discuss here is that it can be seen to just from consistency with some operator equation, that this term must be added in the...
Right, but it's similar causes that when you calculate, say, in QED, when you calculate something like a box diagram,
yes.
Okay, you will say, all sum of all diagrams should produce your F minus, say, to the force, and so all terms will collect themselves in certain structure which correspond to conservation of the current, right?
Yes. Yeah, if you want, we are... insisting on the symmetries to fix this term instead of doing a model-dependent loop calculation.
Mm-hmm. I have a probably related question. So, I mean, so this seems to say that we have a non-trivial A term generated. Say I have a 3D breaking model first.
Yes.
Then we have the. I just start with the 3D breaking scale, for example, and then do the RV flow with the two loop or three loop, and then see the similar terms are generated, for example. Is this what you're doing is the same as the RV computation?
It's not completely the same, but as I was saying, you can see an explicit example that is generated, but it's not generated by the A term. I mean, at least in the examples that I have in mind, okay. It comes from, I will give an explicit example. Okay.
So you're presuming some supersymmetric preserving the regularization?
I mean, this coupling is supersymmetric, and in the example that I have in mind, I use a supersymmetric regulator to compute this term. But the way I will derive or give an idea of how it can be derived does not rely on a specific choice of regulator.
As long as it's supersymmetric.
Yes, I will assume supersymmetry, of course. Okay. So now, instead of deriving this term, I will discuss a much simpler example. And give an idea of how this term is generated. So let me consider an example, which is a two-dimensional field theory. In which we have, let's say certain theory can be also free, perturbed by some operator. And so in this case, we know that if we want to insist on conservation of the energy momentum tensor, we cannot preserve the tracelessness of the energy momentum tensor, but there is a trace anomaly. So I want to consider now the following trick. I will introduce sources for the energy momentum tensor and consider also lambda as a space-dependent source for the operator O. And so the observation here is that this equation can be taken to hold exactly, even in the theory in which G and lambda are promoted to space-dependent sources. So this is a reason why I'm giving this example in the context of two-dimensional theory, because if I was in four dimensions, in principle, when I promote all the coupling to space-dependent sources, I could add here some box times some two-dimensional operator. So I don't want to consider this complication. And two-dimensional, this is true. I mean, this equation can be taken to hold even when these sources are promoted to space-dependent sources. These coupling are promoted to space-dependent sources. And there is a, so in this operator equation, in this context, can be expressed in terms of a operator equation, a differential equation of the generating functional. Following. Let me put some X. Now I'll explain. So first of all, this is what's called the local Kalman-Simancic, local RG. And this kind of approach was introduced by Osborne. And recently, it has been considered by, for instance, Nakayama. We heard about it also in the talk by Rattazzi in this conference. So here the generating functional is defined in the usual way. This the Wilsonian effective action, a certain scale mu. So if you think about it, this equation is exactly saying that this operator equation is taken to be valid also in the theory with the non-trivial sources, and this means that in any correlator of T with O, it is taken to be valid also at coincident points up to a term which contributes only when all the points in the correlators coincide, which is a so-called anomaly. So the study and the classification of this anomaly functional is very interesting, and it's been studied in these references. So for us, this will not play an important role, so I'll not consider that. But so the trick that I want to do now is to consider this equation and see what kind of constraints it puts on the on the couplings appearing in the Wilsonian effective action. In particular, let me concentrate on the conformal mode of the metric. In this case, this is a question. Based only on dimensional analysis, it is also a place in which being in two dimensions simplifies the game a lot. Based on dimensional analysis, I can consider simple answers for the Wilsonian effective action of this form, where C is some function of tau and lambda, which are, I remember, they are space-dependent sources. And since we want lambda to be a source for O, in particular, we will have this relation. And now, let's apply the local Kanasi-Masek equation. Maybe this I should have at least. I'll go here. So if we apply the equation once, what we find is that now let's apply this equation another time. So what we get just schematically rewriting all of this in some point y, then we get all of this in some point x times and on the right hand side we have something which is concentrated when the two points coincide. Okay. Now the observation is that in the theory with the background sources turned on, this in general will be non-zero, also when the two points are taken to be separated. And so the consistency of this equation, so you see on the right-hand side, we have something which is non-zero only at coincident point. And here we have something which is non-zero at separated points. So the consistency requires that. Oh. It vanishes. So together with the other relation, we see that we have fixed an infinite number of couplings of the ground field tau. For instance, we can take a series expansion, and what we will find is that so in particular, I want to draw your attention on this coupling. If you think about it for a moment, it is very similar in form to I forgot to put. Oh, no, okay. Yes. So all this comes with the O in the effective action. So we have lambda O, beta lambda O, tau, etc., etc. And it is very similar to the coupling whose existence we want to show. And indeed, roughly speaking, they two are related by supersymmetry. And so how much time do I have? 5 minutes. So do you have questions on this derivation?
The difference is that gamma was kind of anomalous dimension, and beta of lambda is more generic, right? In particular case, it could be also,
sorry?
Like a gamma, depending on the form of work, right?
Yes. It could also, the anomalous dimension could enter in the more generic cases in the local kinematic equation.
But no, the result sounds kind of reasonable. Because if you are doing kind of interaction with dilatation, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why, you know, you start from the term with beta lambda, then when you're doing dilatation, you'll get this beta dot in this natural way, in the natural way.
Yes, it is. It is related to the to the fact that if we imagine to restore dilatation by enlarging the gauge symmetry of our theory, so we introduce some compensator field, for instance, and enlarging, introducing the gauge symmetry that shifts this compensator field, and in this case, this would give another way to derive this form of the coupling. Just by fixing the coupling of the compensator using conformal invariance. But here, I've been using only diffeomorphism invariance. So the idea is to do the analog of this in the supersymmetric context, where now we have a generating function, which is function of the background supergravity multiplet. So here there is some technicality that I have to remind you. So also the supergravity multiplet can be embedded at least at linearized level in a superfield. And the coupling to the energy momentum tensor can be written in this form. Now, if you remember, the definition for the Ferrazzolino multiplet. So what we have is that when the theory is conformal, there is a gauge redundancy in the superfield, which takes the following form. When the theory is not conformal, we have to impose an additional constraint of this. I should clarify. So what I was saying is that this interaction, using the equation that defines the current, allows to do this kind of transformation, and they preserve this form of the interaction. And this is the parameter of the transformation. This parameter of the transformation contains diffeos. It contains locally SUSY. It contains bulk transformations. It contains superconformal R-symmetry transformation. When conformal symmetry is broken, this parameter must obey a constraint, which takes the following form. And this constraint is such that the last two are eliminated, and one is left only with the diffeos and local SUSY, which are indeed the symmetries that one would expect in a non-conformal theory. Coupled to gravity. And so now I won't give the details, but the idea is that an equation similar to that can be written also in the supersymmetric case. For instance, in the lambda rc cube theory, the idea here is to introduce a source for the operator phi bar phi. Notice that in this theory, this is the operator that acquires a non-trivial anomalous dimension, the operator that generalized. And the idea is to promote the source for this operator to a non-trivial background source, which in this case means to a superfield, a real superfield. And we end up following the same logic with a similar equation, which takes the following form. Here there is some coefficient, which you can find in the paper.
So this G is like a compensated field, right?
Not really. It's the same as this lambda here.
Yeah.
So it's a coupling that we promote to a space-dependent source and allows us to, in a sense, to recover the full group of the full gauge symmetry. If you want, you can compensate. Okay. It's exactly the same as lambda degrees example. And so I should say that there are several things that we are neglecting in our derivation of this equation. So I won't have much to say about the generalization of this A to this case, because it was not necessary to derive the coupling of M, and so we haven't fixed its form. It would be very interesting to see what's the form in generic supersymmetric theories. And also, here, since I am phrasing my equation in terms of the linearized supergravity multiplet, it is not the full equation. In principle, there are higher order terms which appear at higher orders in this supergravity fields, which I'm not fixing. So the moral of the story is that just this form of the equation is sufficient to fix the coupling of M. We can take components of this equation, and we find an equation for the coupling to M, which takes the following form. See, this is quite similar in form to the equation that we had for the dilaton, only that now we have the supergravity field M. This F and D are the higher components of this
gamma.
And gamma is the anomalous dimension. I raised it. Okay. So now I won't go through the derivation, but following exactly the same logic that we see in the dimensional example, one can use this equation to indeed fix the coupling at quadratic level. So I think it's basically, so I wanted to discuss also the an explicit check, but okay, it's fine. So
maybe you can just compare this gap with the gravity mediation, or the one we get from gravity mediation in magnitude.
Yeah, okay, so
numbers.
There is a question here which I glossed over a bit, which is, so I said that this generates a mass term for this field, but I haven't discussed whether there are additional contributions which are maybe more important than this. So the idea here is that, so it comes, this comes to the question of what's the difference between gravity mediation and normal mediation. So if we have something which, generic contribution from macroscopic physics, so from higher dimensional operators, we take the form of some phi A, and then here we have some phi B. So generically, this would be, if you now imagine that this phi x some Babel depth component, this contribution that comes with some uncalculable coefficient, uncalculable from the point of view of the low energy theory, in principle is of the same order of this. But so the crucial assumption that we are making here is that of sequestering. The assumption of sequestering is that it can be phrased as conformal sequestering, if you want, is that in the theory B, we have no such operators of dimension 2, which can be coupled to our visible operators. And in this case, this kind of operators cannot be generated, and this contribution can be the leading term. So let me remember that M takes a value which is F over M Planck. So the contribution that we get is of order gamma dot square over M Planck square. So what else I should comment here?
Any more questions?
So how are your results affected by changes of scheme when you redefine lambdas?
You mean in this example?
Well, I was thinking when you got beta dot, I mean, beta's a vector on the coupling, beta dot isn't.
Here I somehow simplified the discussion considering just one dimension 2 operator. In principle, there could be many, and so we will have some index. This is what you were referring to. But
if you have multiple couplings, then you might need some kind of connection of the space of couplings, kind of covariance.
So this is not a derivative with respect to coupling. This is a derivative with respect to the scale.
Yeah, the same thing. Dot is the same as beta d by lambda.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
about this too, Mr. Wanda. Let's say that we will consider, say, normal kind of gravity and consider correction due to kinetic tone, right? Coming from kinetic tone. So then normally what we'll get some tones which would contain, at the level of loop, would be containing, say, Riemann tensor. To provide, I mean, made out of Riemann or Ricci, but I mean, not out of the menu, I mean, itself, due to the loop. Mm-hmm. Right, so loop, which is kind of non-minimal interaction, right? Okay, here M, of course, not like a graviton, but still, you see, it looks like, this what would be analog of, say, statement that it's kind of associated with certain kind of Riemann tensor or whatever?
So, what I should say, I guess, is that this is just one of the contributions that one gets relatively at quadratic order in the sources. There are many more which I'm not considering.
Uh-huh.
So, in principle, yeah, there could be also corrections which involve the curvature. But I'm focusing on that because in some cases, this is the term that gives the leading contribution to.
But this one looks like kind of, in certain sense, it looks like potential square. And that's why, by impedance, it looks like similar to kind of classical tones in this sense. And that's why I'm asking. So, because, say, normally, when we are talking about Riemann, Riemann is like derivative of, I mean, so maybe M would show up also as a component of this, but I'm just wondering.
So you're asking if in the supersymmetric completion of this term?
But of course it's related to supersymmetry, but then I need not a Riemann tensor, but some kind of supersymmetric generalization of it, right?
Yeah, I mean, the way this coupling is supersymmetrized, I mean, the idea is that this is a partner to some couplings of this form, which involves the conformal factor of the metric.
Mm-hmm.
But, so it does not involve the curvature. I mean, it is not derivative.
Okay. So you have a half-term proposal to gamma prime.
Yes.
Is it a new term? Or the term was known previously and you derived it from the
new? No, it's this term was derived previously. This is the form that generically soft masses, the scalar soft masses have in anomaly mediation.
That mass term is present in addition to the mass term proportional to the coefficient of the beta function? Or is that the same proposition?
So the point is that the contribution, there was not a contribution to the mass proportional to the beta function. The contribution to the mass, so what we discussed before was mass for the Gaugino proportional to the beta function. Then there is an A term proportional to, for instance, the beta function of some Yukawa coupling. And then another possibility that we discussed is a B mu term. But the B mu term arises when we have already mass at Q level. And in that case, we get B mu term, this form. All of this come with the level M. So, in the case of the scalars, for instance, we don't have such a thing. This is the contribution to the
soft masses. All these terms coexist.
Yes, they coexist. Mm-hmm.